Welcome to, well, that fucked me up.
It really did.
A podcast with Luke Coulson.
And Kyle Wise.
And each week we're going to be talking to real guests about their amazing, often traumatic, life-changing events.
Focusing on stories of survival, hope, and overall triumph.
Which is flipping awesome.
Yeah.
Because we're all about that. We're all about listening to people's stories about adversity and trauma and crazy stuff. I think there really is something for everybody. There's many, many topics, many, many guests, people that really have got through some extraordinary things. Please share the love, share the show, get in touch, follow us, subscribe, click. We're trying to make it easy and open for people to discuss things that may normally feel tricky to do so. We've been on an extraordinary journey and we're glad you can join us. Enjoy the show. Welcome to another episode of Well, That Fucked Me Up with Luke.
And Kyle.
Rebecca, every week we find that hilarious, but it's a running joke. Let's welcome our guest, Rebecca. Hi, Rebecca.
Hi.
Nice to have you on the show. Here's my preamble. Our podcast is all about coming through traumatic experiences, surviving life-changing events. We've had guests on who have had like a one-off, you know, immediate impact experience. But we've also had guests that have discussed long-term or a series of experiences that landed, in all occasions, landed people in some pretty dire situations, be it physical or mental health or a place of a crossroads or standing, looking over the precipice or contemplating suicide or being stuck or claustrophobic or needing to get out. With all of that said, where would you like to start and where do you fit into that category or three?
Well, there's probably a lot of places I could fit in, but I think the one that stands out the most to me is coming through a complete faith deconstruction, growing up and being raised in a Christian evangelical home, and then having that whole background, living it for, I'm almost 40, and then over the past 2.5 years, just completely recognizing the amount of fucked up damage it did to me.
Holy shit.
Out in every area of my life.
Oh my gosh, that's incredible. We had a guest on who she was talking a lot about her family who had homeschooled them for 17 years and had kept them in what she had called a fundamentalist Christian cult. They had to wear like church attire on the weekends and school uniforms in the week, even though they weren't going to school. And, you know, and in her experience, it resulted in a pretty major eating disorder as a way of taking control of her life back. Talk to us about the beginning, about what all that looked like when you were growing up.
Yeah, so it is really interesting too, because I think my situation is unique. I'm in conversation with a lot of people who have walked through this, but I grew up in a Christian home that was very, for lack of a better term, like a Pharisee, biblical, very religious, very legalistic, you know, follow the rules. They didn't understand grace in general. And all I knew was the level of that's wanted and needed is perfection, and you don't meet it. And you never will, but keep trying.
When you say legalistic, do you mean like there's no interpretation? It's like the written word is...
Yes. Mm. Yeah, that's exactly what I mean. Very much rules-based, authoritative. I had a father who kind of went in and out of being a part of ministry. So he was at a time an assistant pastor. And I was a rebellious teenager. I was second born. So, you know, just like broke all the rules.
Yeah.
And at one point he said to me, you know, if you don't stop this sinning, I'm going to take you before the front of the church so you can confess your sins to them. And this is, let me also clarify, this is not a church that's like a really religious, strict, legalistic church. That was just my home. The church was non-denominational. They were actually a little more like chill.
So they would have thought that was quite strange.
they would have been like, what the hell is he doing?
Oh, wow.
Oh, my God.
It was insane. So that's kind of a glimpse of what I grew up in. I mean, I wasn't allowed to have barely any friends, not for punishment purpose, for the sake of, we don't want you to be around other people so you can hang out with your friends once a month. Like, and I was a social butterfly. So it was like, I felt like I was in a prison my whole life. Here's where it gets crazy. I went into rebellious mode. I lost my mind, did all sorts of things, got into drugs, you know, slept around, did a whole, everything, the gamut. And then somehow found myself so miserable in that life that I decided the best thing to do was to go back to Christianity. No. Because surely God would forgive me and love me. Yeah. So I'm
infected. Can I ask you a question? Do you think it was rebellious or do you think it was just normal teenage stuff?
Totally normal. Totally normal. It's so easy for me to just like define it that way, because that's the way it was presented. Like, cool. You are, you know, you're going out, you're doing all the things, you're just wanting to be a terrible teenager against everything we have going on here. And it was like, I just wanted freedom. I just wanted to know who I was, and I wanted to be loved. I wanted to feel like I was enough. Mm. And that wasn't happening in my home, so I was looking for it anywhere I could get it. Just that sense of belonging.
I understand that. I mean, we've barely touched the surface, and I've got 1,000 questions already as well. The thing that you said about striving for perfection, that being the ultimate goal, but you will never find it, is horrendous, as we all know. And me coming from a background of never feeling that I had quite achieved what I was expected to, or never getting the validation that I strived as a child, that can be crushing as a kind of an ethos. Absolutely. Or a rule of a parental way of doing stuff. It's like, you'll never get there. You'll never be good enough, but we're going to make sure you keep on trying.
Yeah, absolutely. And I can now at this age look back and know they lived in that because that's the pressure they lived under themselves, right? Like that's how they felt about themselves, that they weren't good enough. And it's not an excuse. I can just see it in a much healthier view now. But that was it. And so for me, it was, once I'm in my, you know, early 20s, I'm like, okay, I'm like a come back to Jesus moment. You know, it has to be better than maybe my parent. Maybe there's something different than the way my parents brought it in, which is true.
Yeah.
It was true.
Yeah.
And I kind of got back into Christianity in my own right, which definitely I would say was in a sense a healthier version of what they brought me up in. I just didn't realize how unhealthy it still was until about 3 years ago.
Oh, wow. So all your life you were brought up, was it just your dad who was the strict kind of Christian teacher in the family?
My mother, though, unfortunately, she lacked identity and operated kind of as a doormat. So,
That's pretty common. And I don't want to generalize all Christian homes, but, you know, from my dabbling, I've noticed that it's like the man is the head of the household, and everybody, which wasn't the case in my household. My mom, get the shit out of it. No kidding.
Yeah, I know what you mean, Kyle. That is a bit of a stereotype, but that it's a terrifying thing. So, and you said you had siblings. So were they all also under this kind of the wrath of?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure my older brother got the worst. I'm one of 5 kids. I'm number 2 of 5. Definitely, especially the first 3 of us got a very similar childhood. And then I think they got really, I don't know if it was tired or lazy or what, there wasn't as much extreme authoritativeness.
Right.
It's still the, you don't measure up, you're not good enough, a lack of like no nurturing, no loving. There was a period of time in my childhood. I mean, my mother wouldn't even hug me. I don't even know why, like no touching, no. And my personality is desperate for affirmation.
Same.
And touch, that sense that like you're loved. I think that's normal for any kid.
Yeah.
And not getting that was, I just felt thirsty.
Oh God.
So when you were coming up in this, were you able to go to your siblings and be like, or were they kind of, did they in a sense drink the Kool-Aid as well?
No, or? I would say that we would talk shit, you know, and be upset together.
Yeah.
I think what happened though is that because all of us were in that state of desperation and we were so just so wounded and so insecure, we pitted against each other a lot, because if it would mean attention for us, even if it hurt them, you know what I mean? It was like, it was very unhealthy, like an extremely unhealthy dynamic. Mm. I wasn't close to any of my siblings until in adult life. And now at this point, I'm really kind of only close, very close to one of them.
Wow. So talk to us about the rebel, the realization you needed to break away from this. And then you mentioned that didn't fill the hole that you thought would fill the hole. So, you know, I understand maybe the drinking and the drugs and the sleeping around, as you mentioned. And then how was that feeling of, well, hold on a second. Like, I'm going to try that thing again. How does that happen?
My sister's about 4 years younger, and she was still in my parents' home when I was out doing my own thing, living on my own now, living with my boyfriend, doing all the things. And we didn't talk too often, but there was something that she was still going to church and she was still living in it and still, you know, had no problem with Christianity, just mainly our parents. And so she would talk to me every now and then. And she was always like, "Mom and Dad don't get it. Like, it's not about rules and stuff. You know, Jesus was all about love and grace." Mm. And so there was something alluring to me about the way she would talk compared to everything I really understood.
Yeah.
So I hit rock bottom because I was in a 2.5-year relationship with a stone cold narcissist, you know? And so, you know, at some point you have to be like, well, not true. There are people I know who don't ever get to that point, but I was like, this shit sucks.
Well, congratulations. Congratulations for realizing that. And we've had some survivors of narcissistic abuse and extremely traumatic relationships. So congrats for getting out of that.
Yes, thank you. So it was actually one of the hardest things I did was to let go of him, because so much of my identity was wrapped up in him. It was just a mess. So when I'm getting out of that, I'm like desperate for anything to make me feel valuable. And the way she talked about God, I was like, you know what? I think there's something there I've been missing. So I really just started spending time praying and reading my Bible. And I finally eventually started going back to church. And it did feel different to me.
Yeah.
Apart from the way my parents raised me. And there were things about it that were alluring, that felt real. And I still believe there are things about it that were real. I'm not an atheist at this point. I believe in spirituality still very, very much. But the next, this is funny because I'm thinking here, I'm about 20 years old. And I end up marrying a guy pretty quickly after that, who's still my husband to this day. He's an awesome guy. I don't even know how that happened. It was like incredible.
Maybe there's a God thing.
Right. We met at church. And so he's a Christian, but he's not narcissistic. He's not legalistic, whatever. So we start dating, and probably like a year into our marriage, he's like, "Yeah, I think I feel like I'm supposed to be a youth pastor someday." He's in the Navy at this time. And I was like, "Oh God." I really didn't do, like, I didn't, yeah. You know, I didn't want to go that route, but yeah. I was like, you know what? He's a different type of person. He's not, you know, it's going to be okay. Over the next like many years, we had kids, we got into ministry. And again, there was still a lot of healthy stuff I felt, but there was always stuff in the back of my mind that just wouldn't sit right with me. But I kind of, you know, you dumb shit down and you like compartmentalize and you just kind of separate yourself.
Yeah. Selective hearing.
So he was in ministry. We ended up moving 10 years into our marriage to another state. We went into ministry together. I was a pastor as well. So this is where it gets real interesting, right? Because like we were in it.
Wow.
Yeah.
In it for many years. They say that for most people who deconstruct, there's typically one brick that comes out first. And so I had a friend ask me recently, what was the brick that came out for you? Because you'll think these things, but then you won't do anything about it. The first brick that came out for me was at least five years ago, and it was homosexuality. I was like, I always had a problem with it being a sin.
Yeah.
At that point, I was just like, this is unreal. I cannot be in agreement with this anymore.
Yeah.
It's a sin and that it's wrong and that marriage, none of it. Like I can't. So that was the first brick. And it was a slow process at that point of what started happening to me. But basically, to sum it up, I began to allow every belief I had to start coming right in front of my face and me tearing it apart.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow.
I wish I could say it was a lot of fun.
But over what sort of a period of time was that then? And did you realize it was happening? Or was it like a sort of a boiling frog situation where you weren't kind of aware until you were deconstructed, as it were?
I would say it's somewhere in between. Wow. So I wasn't aware of it immediately, but when I got really aware of it was when I approached our senior pastor, because my husband was not the senior pastor. He was an assistant pastor, and I was like the family team pastor. I quit doing that before he ever did. But I've always been kind of a bulldog, and I saw some stuff going on with the senior pastor that was completely unacceptable.
Wow.
And I confronted him on it. It had to do with another woman. And I confronted him on it, and he seemed all right. Like, I'm going to take care of it. I'm going to talk to her and talk, you know, you're right. There's some inappropriate stuff that needs to be handled. Well, nothing got handled. And I came back to him again, and I sat down in his office. I remember this day like it was yesterday. I sat down in his office and I said, hey, you know, this is what happened. Like, but nothing. I just talked to this woman 2 days ago. There's something missing here. This is a situation that needs to be handled. It's inappropriate. Your wife has talked to me about this situation. She, you know, and I'm the one doing it, you know, and he, 4 sentences in, it was over. He gaslighted the shit out of me. He turned everything around on me. Mind fucked the shit out of me. I didn't even know my left from right, top to bottom. I didn't know what was happening. It was craziness. 20 minutes later, I walked out of there and all I could think was, I'm fucking going crazy.
Yeah.
I'm losing my mind. Like, why do I feel crazy right now? Like, nothing made sense to me.
Yeah.
Which is interesting because I dated a narcissist 20 years before this, but like, this guy was the best.
Wow.
The amount of manipulation and spiritual abuse that was happening in that church that I didn't catch on to for years was astronomical.
But that's probably because you weren't open to seeing it, right? Or you were blinkered at that stage. And, I think that's just extraordinary. And then it had started with the brick, and then the seed had been planted.
Yeah. So this, with that situation right there, I didn't realize it until I looked back on it. That situation was definitely what created a very big domino effect as far as like shot off the deconstruction happening. So it, again, this is why I think it's easy for people who know me now and they're like, oh, she was just wounded. That's why she's at where she's at. She just got hurt by someone.
Right.
I'm like, no, the process I went through was not healing my hurt or not being healed of my hurt and woundedness. The process I went through was like, holy shit. Who am I? What do I really believe? Why do I believe it? What do I want to believe? I mean, it was actually tormenting. I felt like I was taking parts of me and ripping them out.
Did you feel like you had wasted a chunk of your life in that, whatever that was, a decade or something, where you had gone back to Christianity, married the Christian guy, and then invested all your time on your terms back into it, thinking, oh, I figured it out, and this isn't on my parents' terms anymore, this is on my terms?
Yes and no. There was definitely a part of me that felt that way, but I had been pursuing like personal development and mindset stuff and even like law of attraction and energy things for the past several years before that. So that really helped me to expand my perspective of all the ways it would benefit me to have gone through this.
That's clever.
I have three questions. One, can you describe that moment? Because like, you know, that was like your identity. Being a Christian is like an identity.
Yeah.
And when you question all those things, I mean, how did that make you feel when you were like, shit, like.
It made me scared. I felt one of the reasons why I think deconstruction takes a long time and it's a very personal journey. I had people come ask me later, like, oh, can you want to sit down and tell me about your experience? And I'm just like, it's like, this is a terrible analogy, but there's something about it that's like, having something traumatic happen to you, something very personal, maybe sexual trauma or something, and then being asked to just tell some stranger about
it.
Like,
of course. Yeah.
So part of it that was the most terrifying was, again, that idea of like ripping parts out of me. That's what it felt like. And the best way to describe my experience for at least a year straight, I felt like I was falling.
Wow.
I just felt like I was falling. And I didn't know when I would ever land. I didn't know what I believed anymore. I didn't have anything to grasp onto. And then you have that, right? That fear, that craziness of your whole identity. But then it was coupled with, and if I'm wrong, I'm going to hell.
Shit. Yes, of course.
Yikes.
Yeah. I mean, now I've got more questions. Carl, let's get your questions. What are your other two?
The two are kind of coincided. You know, when, and this is from my past experience, I wonder if you had something similar, where when you begin to question your faith or, you know, obviously I assume the deconstruction was known to the church. Did they kind of dismiss it or like invalidate your feeling and say, oh, you know, you're just brushed aside? And then on top of that, because in that mindset, there's usually the man is the household. Was your husband affected by that, is standing in the church?
That was good question.
So actually what I left out was that when that situation happened with the senior pastor, that was the beginning of the end for me in regards to being there. I basically started finding my way out. My husband ended up going on sabbatical a couple months later to just take a complete break. And when he came back, he decided he no longer wanted to be a pastor or work at the church at all. So the benefit, I guess, in that is that we did not have to go through this full-blown deconstruction process in the inside the church and as pastors. I think the thing that you're asking in regards to the way people respond, I have always been, I've always presented myself as a pretty confident and outspoken person. And I'm not afraid of conflict. I don't love it, but I'm not afraid of it. And so I guess the benefit there is that most people who have seen, because I'm now vocal on social media about just where I'm at. I don't dog Christians, or I don't badmouth people who choose other things. I'm honest about where I'm at. Those people who, I mean, were friends, if you'll call them, with me for years, they just stopped talking to me. They've just shut up.
Wow.
They haven't said, like, the people who reach out to me and ask me questions about my journey are people I barely know. I don't really have anything, you know, any relationship with them. The ones who have been close to me, no, they don't, they just stop.
It's very Christian of them.
I guess when you're in it and you're a believer, you definitely don't want to hear about anyone's theories or reasoning as to why you should stop believing, I guess, you know. I mean, all this Christianity stuff's quite close to my mum's a pastor, and she got me into kind of an evangelical church when I was in my late teens, early 20s, and she ended up becoming a pastor in the Christian church, and just very much her entire life. She'll be listening to this, so I have to tread carefully. But I was quite enamored with the whole thing for a while, even though it was a bit happy clappy, and you know, and I kind of used to look forward to it on a Sunday and go to this big school hall, and there's lots of young people. It was very Christian, like very cliche, stereotypical Christian. But similarly, I missed a week, and I had about 25 people surround me the next week, telling me that I couldn't miss a week, or else I would lose all of my faith, my standing in the church, and I'd probably go to hell. And like, I'm basically walking alongside the devil if I don't come, if I miss a week. So guess what? I never went back. Screw missing a week. I'm missing all the weeks.
Yeah. And you know what, Kyle? I realized I didn't answer your question in regards to my husband. So my husband is still on his deconstructive journey right now. I would say he's maybe 6 months to 9 months behind me.
Oh, wow.
And I don't say behind me to call it something that he has to catch up with me specifically and where I'm at as much as when he started.
He started later. Yeah.
He's at the point right now that he feels like he's falling.
But how is that? Because in all likelihood, he could have very easily not been with you in your realization or your experience. And he could have very easily, that could have ended your relationship. Secondly, you could have remained together, and that could have been quite something, with you questioning everything that he was believing in. But the fact that he took, I guess, the things that were coming out of your mouth or the things you were talking about with him and seeing your response and your reactions, and he was like, huh, did he have a... And so bit by bit, he's having a slow but sure deconstruction of all of his faith as well? Or his...
Yeah, I think so. I think he's willing to put all the stuff in front of him and question it one thing at a time, you know, over and over again. And I think that's one benefit we've had. We've always had a healthy relationship in regards to communicating to each other, trying to see each other's perspectives, respecting if we don't agree on things. You know, there's been that synergy between us. So that benefited us in this too, because you do see that often happen where that's when really relationships start to deteriorate, is one person is shifting or changing or growing in this route, and the other person's like, I'm not moving, I'm not going anywhere. Or they're like going the opposite direction. I think that would be really challenging. I don't think that, and I've told him this, like, I don't feel that he has to, you know, completely get rid of every belief he's had for us to continue to have a healthy marriage. I think it's about respecting each other and the beliefs we do have. And there's still a whole lot that I don't even know what I do believe in regards to it. When people ask me and I have the desire to tell them anything, what I say is this: everything based in fear, I have rejected. Everything based in love, I still accept. So that's a general overview of the easiest way to tell people anything. But when I think about some of the, I mean, the whole point of your podcast, like what really fucked me up bad, the worst was the purity culture. Like thinking that my body was bad, that sex is only made for marriage, and it's really me for my husband to do what I, which he, again, this, my husband did not abuse this, or this didn't come, but like in my mind, how effed up it was.
Wow.
It, that truly messed me up. Purity culture is a shit show, and it does so much damage to people. And then the other thing is this idea that original sin doctrine, that we are all born inherently worthless, bad, messed up.
Yeah.
You know, yes.
Like, it's disgusting.
Yeah, that's horrendous.
Yeah, you wonder with worthiness for so long. It's like, you were literally gaslighted and brainwashed your whole life to believe you're a piece of shit. And the only way that you're not a piece of shit is you accept that Jesus died for you, but then you still need to show him how great you are by your work.
Yeah, it's absolutely terrifying. Sorry, Kyle, you were going to say?
Oh, no, I was going to say, I could talk about this, like... I could talk about this all day. Like I used to like argue with Christians and be like, did it mean that, or historically are you just misinterpreting it?
Yeah. But to be clear, your parents were more the letter of the law, but your renewed Christianity in the church with which you were associated was not necessarily a word for word.
No, it was definitely not legalistic. I was much more liberal, and I felt a lot more free. A ton more than the way I was raised, for sure, by far. I think there were still just certain things that I realized, like, this is wrong. Like, I have lived in this box for so long, and you don't realize how small your box is until you get out of it.
Yeah.
I, being a liberal Christian, thought my box was really big.
Yeah.
I'm like, ah! And then I got out of it, I'm like, holy shit. So for me, I still believe in spirit, source energy, whatever you want to call it. Like I believe in a higher power, but it's like so expansive to me now. It's so, and so supportive. And so like, there, it's just pure love. There's no other way to describe it.
Firstly, this is amazing. This is hitting a note, because here's the thing. I went from Christian and God-fearing to completely atheist to what I then determined to be agnostic with an open mind. So I decided I was reluctantly atheist because I realized how much easier life would be if I had faith, which I didn't have. So then I decided I was agnostic because I was completely undecided. Then over the last 2 or 3 years, certainly living in LA, you can't really avoid the kind of spiritualistic side of what people have to say. But my problem is that I am really struggling to get away from the notion of the Christian God and Jesus and repurpose that for something that's just more expansive and holistic and around me. Because what I want to believe in is universe and the power of energy and going back to how we came, and, you know, and that makes me feel great when I talk about that. But I can't help but look up to the sky, and instead of seeing the universe, imagine a sort of a slightly angry, like, God with a beard staring down on me. And it's very hard to get away from. So it sounds like you've managed to do that quite easily.
I do. It's kind of odd, actually. I do feel like it's happened pretty well. God, the word God, I don't use as much just because it does still trigger the biblical God.
Yes.
I personally believe in Jesus, meaning I believe he existed and I believe he was like source energy God. But here's where it's completely different for me. I do not believe he came to die for our sins.
Mm.
I believe as like a teacher, like Buddha, like someone else, you know, came to show us love. Like this is unconditional love. Like I want you to know that that's who you are.
Yeah.
That's what you are. And if any part of you feels unworthy, I'm going to show you, like, as a friend, you're so worthy. I would even die for you. You're so worthy.
I love that.
Not because you need it, not because you're worthless or desperate for it, or I have to do something to account for your shittiness. No, like, you already are that person. I want you to know it.
Yeah.
It's funny because it's like if we actually broke down the teaching of Jesus, like, he's basically saying that.
Yeah.
People interpret it, and that's like, first off, congrats, because a lot of people are still stuck in that old narrative and they're never going to be able to get out of that ideology.
Yeah. And I think what we end up seeing, I've joined this Facebook group, and I don't go in there much, but it's Mental Health for Ex-Evangelicals. And unfortunately, what I see a lot of in there is people went pendulum swing one to the other side, and not in regards to what they believe, God or no God, in regards to, like, they're so traumatized and hurt by everything that happened, rightfully so, that all they want to do is spit loathing words and hate the energy of, like, let me show you why this is fucked up. You're a moron. You're this. And I don't feel that at all. I don't feel the need to prove my side to anyone. Like, my goal is not to convince any Christian that they shouldn't be a Christian.
Totally.
My goal is to be me, my lit up fucking awesome self, shine my bright light, and whatever people are attracted to my light, awesome. And if you're not, that's okay too. Like that's how I feel. So it's a lot more freeing. And unfortunately what you were saying, Kyle, too, like you see these, it just ends up being people don't get out. Or they get out and they're so hurt and bitter and wounded, like they really are still in a fucking prison.
Yeah. Well, you know, they're traumatized. There's a lot of trauma attached to some of these things. And albeit not a cult, you know, it's a loosely banded around word these days. But if you are indoctrinated and somewhat brainwashed and being lied to and gaslighted on a regular basis, welcome to the cult.
It's like in many churches.
My personal story is I struggle with some of that because I definitely experienced some institutional trauma at a certain denomination, you know, and how do you rectify like some personal trauma happening or sexual abuse happening at an institutional level and then being like, all right, God. All right, the church has like completely turned their back and like moved priests around and everything. And you're like, you're supposed to be God's speaker.
Yeah.
Like God's figurehead.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like a journey for me. I was super stoked to like be on here with you. So
I don't negate anybody's trauma because you're right. It's definitely a personal journey and a process. And I no longer like condone or want to be a part of any truth in the future, which I just had this conversation with my dad. But I also see like, okay, all I can do is my own healing journey apart from that. I'm not going to say it was right or anything that happened was right. Like, I'm not going to condone any of it anymore, but like, I want what's best for me so I can be the best version of myself for the people I'm around, for my kids, for my husband, for the influence that I have in front of me. And like, I refuse to let that shit continue to imprison me and have power over me any longer.
And that's a main takeout from a lot of our guests who have been through any type of experience where they're locked into that trauma or that nightmare experience, is releasing the power that experience has over them and finding freedom. What I wanted to ask was, what are you doing with all of this stuff? What, with all the experience that you've had, obviously, was being a pastor your career, or did you have a career as well as being a pastor? And then what are you doing, I guess, now with your learnings?
Yeah. So being a pastor was never really a career, line of career for me that I really wanted. What I found though years ago was that I loved speaking. I loved speaking. I loved inspiring. I loved encouraging. It was my nature anyway. And since communication was, it came easy for me, that made sense. Like I'm in the church. I'll just start speaking on stage. And I got a lot of great feedback when I would speak because I was always super down to earth. I had dropped cuss words on stage. People loved that or hated it. You know, just, it was just very relevant for even the youth in there. They'd be like, oh, okay, can she speak? So I knew I had this gift. When that was over with, and even now, for me, my passion is absolutely to empower other people to live their most lit up life, to follow their dreams, to stop the limiting beliefs, to just get rid of all the bullshit that holds them back and become the version of them they were meant to, whatever that looks like. There's no box around that from my angle. It's just like, let me help, you know, partner with you to co-create whatever you want. So I'm a transformational life coach, actually. Nice. And it is legitimately the best thing ever. It's exactly what I was ever meant to do. And so if this journey took me to this place, like, and that's how I got here, okay. Because I know this is who I am and this is why I'm here.
Wow. And so transformational life coach is exactly what it sounds like. It's basically transforming or helping people to transform their lives. So people would come to you when they're having a bad time or in a rut or in a hole or, you know, whether that's a relationship or a marriage or career or anything. And you advise them on how to get out of that. How do you go about? How do you go about?
Less advising. And so the best way to explain coaching is to tell you what it's not. So therapy, a therapist, which are all well needed. They are often focused on your past and your present. Right? The trauma from your past, let's deal with that. Let's uncover things. And then presently how you're going to kind of handle that.
Yeah.
My main focus is present future.
Cool.
It doesn't mean we don't touch on people's past, but really I'm going to partner with you to give you tips and tools to understand what's going on, where do you want to be and how to get there.
Wow.
I work a lot on mindset, a lot on conscious language, like what's coming out of your mouth, on reframing fear, reframing thought patterns, and really getting you to the next stage. So it's more of an up-level your life type thing.
Yeah.
I think if people come to me and they're like, I have a vetting process, right? Because I'm not the best fit for everybody and they're not the best fit for me. So when people come to me, it's really seeing, okay, are you still struggling in a lot of victim thinking?
Yeah.
Because I'm not going to be able to help you at that point just because that's not my thing. It doesn't mean there aren't people for you to help you. I'm going to refer you out. Or are you like, okay, this is what I want to do. I'm ready to go. I'm ready to take action. Yes. But I've got some things, some blocks holding me back.
You know, interesting.
Like, let's walk through this. And so it's really, those are my jam. Those are the people that I work best with.
People that are ready. People that are ready to find their way out and raring to go. I feel like that's why Kyle and I started this podcast. Because after years of like sort of just accepting feelings of being worthless or victims or we just decided we didn't want to do that anymore. We wanted to just let our stuff out, get our stuff out to the universe, tell our stories, start a podcast, which we didn't think was going to be going this long, quite frankly. And now, you know, here we are 32 episodes in, 6 months later, with all the kind of, you know, loads and loads of listeners and all sorts of things going on. And when you speak to people who have all been through similar things and you realize there's so much help and there's so much empowerment out there and there's people that have been through some stuff and you can't even believe how has that person got through that? And not only that, how do they feel that they're better versions of their former selves and that they're happier than they were before?
Yep.
How is that possible?
It is. It is awesome. And that's the one thing I see. Like I struggled with not feeling good enough my entire life. And the deconstruction that happened was like the final key that turned this inherent thing. Again, it was the original sin doctrine. Like you are inherently bad. And to get rid of that and to completely eradicate that from my life, I'm like, holy shit, I am fucking awesome. Oh my God. And it was literally the key I needed so that I could be the person that was needed for the people I serve.
Yeah.
Right? Like I need that key to be unlocked so that I can actually help it unlock it in other people.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Gosh, Jesus. Oh, whoops. That shouldn't say. I feel like we should just end. I mean, that's such a great way to end the podcast with me blaspheming with Jesus.
I don't think Jesus cares, just so you know.
All right. Woo! Here we go. This is where I apologize to my mom. She'll enjoy this one.
I definitely felt some Catholic insecurity when you said that.
Yeah.
Really, exactly.
Well, I was Catholic schooled all the way through, and then so after the Catholics and the Mass and the Jesuit priests, then I had my mum who became a born again Christian. So it was quite the ride.
Isn't it funny, like how deep those roots go?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Of course it is.
It's crazy.
I mean, it's your whole upbringing. So, Rebecca, I think unless there's anything else, we're going to wrap up this amazing conversation of your deconstruction and your re-evolution. See what I did there?
Yeah, really, like a rebirth. I'm so appreciative of you having me on here. I have not actually talked like that about kind of the whole story like that with anyone, really kind of gone over it. It's just almost therapeutic for me.
Well, here's the thing. We haven't yet, and I mentioned this last time, for some reason, we've got quite a good little thing going on, Kyle and I. We do seem to get the best out of people because it's a very on point topic. It's like you had some stuff going on, it fucked you up, and then you decided you didn't want that to fuck you up anymore. So how did you get out of it? So it's like very direct. It's completely not tenuous at all. And when people want to come on, they want to come on for a reason. So we do find ourselves like, I want to limit it to 45 minutes. I had a chap on last time and we went on for 2 hours and 15 minutes and I had to edit it down. And it was like, where do I stop? And actually, to be honest with you, at some point I was like, oh, stop now, stop talking now. But, you know, and it's just, it feels great. Everyone has an amazing story to tell and everything seems relevant to the topic. And it's just, we're having a wonderful time. And hopefully helping some people along the way, as are you by being on here. We will put your information in the show notes.
100%.
So well, people can find you. They can find your website, or they can, however findable you'd like to be. We can, you know, often put Facebooks and Instas, and we can't wait. We can't wait for this episode to be on.
Thank you guys so much.
It's lovely to meet you.